Good morning, welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be focusing on the 20th parak of Sefer Shmuel Beis. We're really coming to the end of Shmuel Beis over here. This is the end of David's career. And as David HaMelech is triumphantly moving back to his dominion over his kingdom, unfortunately tragedy strikes again. This chapter is going to be focusing on the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri. Just when David HaMelech thinks he's got it covered again, there's a person whose name is Sheva ben Bichri. He comes from Binyamin. And he leads a rebellion. We know that David HaMelech is coming back from the east banks of the Jordan, and there was a division between Yehuda and Bnei Yisrael as to who really had the rights to bring David back first. And while this is all happening, he goes and says, "We don't follow David." And he brings rallies a whole group of people with him against David. David HaMelech is quite concerned about this, so he returns home. He returns to Yerushalayim, and as a side note, the Tanakh tells us that the Pilag Shim, the 10 Pilag Shim, these concubines that he had who were raped by Avshalom, David HaMelech is no longer able to be married to, and tragically we're told about how they remain Al Munois Chayos. They are living widows in a sense because of Avshalom for the rest of their days. And David HaMelech then returns home and gets very concerned about this, the rebellion of Sheva. So he turns to Amasa. Remember, Amasa is David's new general, who he used to replace Yoav. And he says, "Amasa, you got 3 days to gather an army again to fight against Sheva ben Bichri, because we don't know where he's going to now settle, which cities he's going to take away from us. And this could be even worse than Absalom's rebellion." Remember, he's just fought a battle against Israelites, his own, in fighting against Absalom. And this is what happens. So Sheva ben Bichri, in the meantime, goes northwards and takes a few cities, and Amasa goes to rally the troops. While this is happening, remember that Yoav has been excluded. Yoav was David's general. So what actually happens? Yoav meets Amasa leading the troops on the way up to war. And Yoav comes and he says, "Amasa, hashalom atachi, how are you doing? Peace upon you, my brother." And Yoav reaches out to grab Amasa's beard as if to kiss him on the cheek. And as he pulls him close, Amasa didn't realize that Yoav had his sword sticking out. And Yoav kills him as he pulls him close, killing him by sticking the sword through the fifth rib, which is, of course, seems to be the method of killing in a Shmuel Beis. This is the circle of the spiral of revenge and death continues. And Amasa dies on the path there. His innards falling out, as Tanakh tells us, on the path. In the meantime, he's leading the army, so everybody sees what's going on. They all stop dead in their tracks. So what Yoav deftly says is, "Anybody who wants to be after David, anybody who wants to follow, come follow me." And they push Amasa into the field and cover him with a garment, and everybody charges on. Sort of like, the herd mentality in a sense. They were going after for David's command. Oh, well, the leader changed. That's fine. And they carry on going and they follow Yoav into battle. In the meantime, they find that Sheva has taken a city, which is the city called Avela Beis Ma'acha. And so what they do is they encircle the city and they start siege warfare against the city, and they're encroaching upon the walls. In the meantime, there's an Isha Chachama, a wise woman, who sees what's going on. She lives in the city. She sticks her head out of the windows and she calls in a truce way. She calls towards Yoav and she says, "Yoav, is this Yoav?" And he said, "It is I." And she says, "Why are you going to kill the city of Israel?" He says, "No, Chas v'Shalom, we don't want to kill everybody. We're just here to get Sheva ben Bichri." So she said, "Well, I'll give you his head." She goes back into the city. She speaks to the elders of the city, and she convinces them to capture Sheva ben Bichri to save themselves. She captures him. They capture him, remove his head, decapitate him, and throw the head out. And Yoav calls all the troops to disperse, therefore not destroying another city in Israel. And Yoav returns back to Yerushalayim, triumphant, to the king, having saved once again yet another rebellion. Yoav once again being a very powerful individual in saving David's kingship. And then we're told at the end of the parak that Yoav is the general, but Nayahu ben Yehoyada is in charge of the kreis in the placey, that is the the Urim v'Tumim. And then Adoram is in charge of the taxation. Yehoshaphat ben Achilud is their secretary. And it goes on to describe the various positions of royalty and in the cabinet of David HaMelech. So a few things to think about when looking at this parak. Number one is, what is with Sheva? Like, why now? What's going on? Why is Sheva ben Bichri taking advantage? So the Metzudas David says, very simple, is everybody's in disarray. Here, David Melech, there's been a civil war just fought. David Melech is still in pain about his son. Israel and Yehuda are fighting over who has the rights to David and who should have invited him back first. Perfect opportunity of disarray. Sheva says, let me see, take advantage. He takes advantage of the chaos to pull it apart. It seems that David Melech is not keen to use Yoav because he has used Yoav before to try to quell the rebellion of Avshalom, and he went against his word. That Yoav went ahead and killed Avshalom. So David Melech is rejecting Yoav as his helper here, and he's using Amasa, who was actually the general of Avshalom, to help him. It seems that David Melech is very concerned. He almost says that this rebellion is worse than Avshalom. Why is that? David Melech doesn't know how many cities that he's going to be able to take, how many people in the disarray and the chaos he's going to be able to succeed in bringing to his side. He doesn't know this, and therefore he's very concerned that this should be taken care of as soon as possible, not to lose any time, which is why he turns to Amasa and only gives him 3 days to pull this all together. It seems that Yoav takes back his position in a very nefarious way. But when going into this battle, there's one or two things just to question. Number one is, who is this lady? Now, it may be inconsequential. Maybe that we don't need to know who this lady is. But there is a Chazal in the Drash, which the Radak quotes, who says that this actually was Serach Bas Asher. Serach Bas Asher, of course, lived an extremely long time. Her zchus that gave her longevity was revealing the identity of Yosef, or Yosef's being alive to Yaakov in a way which was not going to hurt him or harm him, and she was blessed with a long life. And Chazal very poetically described how she was the one who showed Moshe where the bones of Yosef were. She was the one who told Yaakov where Yosef was still alive. She is the one who's accompanied him all the way. And because of her experience, she says, I was there when Moshe Rabbeinu and Yoshua were talking about division of the land. And I know you don't just kill cities. We're a Jewish city. We're an Israelite city. You don't just kill people. You ask for peace first. Try to resolve the issues before you start killing. And that's what she was saying to Yoav. Nonetheless, when going into this, there is an interesting halachic tidbit in this whole conversation over here. Here you have a hostage situation. Not so simple. Are you allowed to trade people? Are you allowed to sacrifice one person for others? Not so simple. The Gemara talks about this, and the Chazal say that, let's say people are surrounded by highwaymen, chas v'shalom, and they say, give us one of you, we'll kill one of you, and then we won't kill the rest. Are you allowed to do that? So the Chazal say, no, you're not allowed to select one person to be killed. We don't play it as a moral numbers game. However, if they say, give us person X, or we'll kill all of you, in that case you can, and that is learned from our particular case over here, where Sheva ben Bichri was selected by name, so they could throw him out. If it was, give us anyone in the city, they would not be able to eject him, even if it was killing the whole city. It is a more complex sugya. There are a few other aspects over here which are influencing. Number one is Sheva ben Bichri is liable for death in the first place, because he was rebelling against the king. And number two is that the options were Shev being killed or all of them being killed, and they're all in the same place. What's called Hu Bifnim Vehem Bifnim. They're in the same situation as opposed to maybe being caught in different rooms or chambers. Complex situation. A lot of moral thoughts have gone into these kinds of situations. The trolley problem starts talking about these kind of things. Can you divert a trolley from a group of people to one person? This is where it all comes from. This is where Chazal talk about this. A much bigger chapter to think about in terms of the philosophy and the moral correctness of this specific situation. One or two fascinating points at the end of the parak, which are really, I thought, very incisive. And that is that why does the parak reaffirm who's in charge of David's cabinet? So the Malbim points out, the first thing we see over here is that Yoav is the general again. Whether David liked it or not, David wanted to replace Yoav with Yehoiada, which he does later on when he dies. But he can't now. Yoav is too powerful. Yoav is the champion of the people. Yoav is the successful general who's now quelled two rebellions to David. David has no way of touching him. Sometimes it's your most loyal who are the most dangerous. And that's what David has realized over here. Yoav is at this point in time, not possible to get removed until after David HaMelech actually dies. Last thing, which Jamali makes, which is an incredible insight into the economics of rebellion, and that is why it tells us about David's renewed cabinet, is it tells us that there's a new tax collector and that there's a new mazkir, a new secretary. And the reason is because how do rebellions really work? It's true that rebellions are led by some idealists, but ultimately the way it really works is it works because of a rabble, because of a discontented populace. When you read about any rebellions, when you read about the 1979 rebellion in Iran, when you read about the rebellions when it comes to the French Revolution, when it comes to the Russian Revolution, you read about it, there were a few idealists leading the charge, but ultimately, the pitchforks and tar came from people who were economically disincentivized, people who felt that their government wasn't giving them what they deserved and needed. That's what they were fighting for. So says the mob, and you see this very clearly over here. What does Dawud al-Malik do immediately after these two rebellions is he changes the tax system. He creates more transparency. He replaces the cabinet positions are in charge of tax collection, because one of Absalom's claims was that there's no real mishpat with David HaMelech. You can't get your real justice, which is what the people said. Wait a second, we're paying taxes, we're not getting anything. So David HaMelech made it very clear after his rebellion, we're going to revise the transparency of the economic systems so all the people themselves would also feel happy. Just an interesting insight into reclaiming calm in a kingdom. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.